Welcome to Share Talk, the only podcast where investors come first.
Hello and welcome to Share Talk. Today I'm joined by Nick Hubble, who is from Fortune and Freedom, which is a newsletter. How are you today, Nick?
Pretty well, thanks. How about you?
I'm doing fine. Difficult times at the moment, especially from an investment point of view and perhaps from every other point of view as well. How does Fortune and Freedom help people, if that's what its raison d'etre is?
Yeah, in all sorts of different ways. What we want people to do is start taking back control of their investments, their money, their finances, and start trying to become aware of what's going on in their financial life, both the threats and the opportunities. So we try and make them aware of what those threats and opportunities are, and then we try and give them a helping hand in terms of taking advantage of the opportunities and protecting themselves from the threats. We discuss all sorts of different things within that. So for example, this week we've been discussing Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and whether they should play a role in people's finances or not. We often discuss government policy, obviously, and the effect on investors. And then the big topics since we've launched have, of course, been Brexit and COVID-19.
And I mean, I think traditionally, having some exposure to real estate and a few blue chip stocks, maybe a bit of Marks and Spencer's, BP, blah, blah, blah. And that's about as much as people can do. Otherwise, they might send their cash off to a fund managing expert like Neil Woodford or something like that. But basically, it's traditionally that's been the way forward. I mean, they're almost like whatever happens, whether there's a stock market crash or there's a global financial crisis. In the end, if you hold on to, or you're able to hold on to your real estate and your equities, you'll win over. Is there anything more to life than that?
Well, I disagree with most of what you've said so far. I don't think those things are true. And I think believing in those things is what has led people astray so far. We get a huge amount of emails from our readers basically explaining how disappointed they are. And one of the reasons is because they've believed those things that you've just said. Now, personally, I'm not so sure about the real estate one. That can go either way. It's obviously played a huge role in people's lives over the last few decades. I'm not so sure if that means it's going to continue or whether the trend has played out. Also, real estate's just such a case-by-case asset, and it's a home or is it an investment, all those sorts of issues. So we haven't discussed real estate much yet. We do plan to discuss REITs, which is a way of investing in real estate via the stock market. So that's one option we will be discussing in the future. But the idea that you can set and forget your share portfolio, you know, buy and hold, stocks go up in the long run, all of these things, when you look a bit closely at them, they sort of start to fall apart, or at very least, you should be able to do better than what those promises suggest you'll get. So this is really a good place to start because there's some easy pickings. So for example, stocks haven't gone up in the long run for the last 20 years in the UK. Historically, in a lot of places, they haven't gone up for much longer periods than that. If you look at the Americans, which is where most of the research that suggests stocks go up in the long run comes from, the American stock markets had huge long periods where they didn't go up, adjusted for inflation. I think there was two periods of 60 years where the Dow Jones Industrial Average was back where it was on an inflation-adjusted basis. That doesn't take into account dividends. But it shows that these ideas of stocks always going up in the long run is just a risky mentality to have because it's just setting yourself up for underperformance and failure. Whereas if you do take a bit of an interest and think a bit more carefully about these sorts of things, you can do better for yourself. At least that's what we believe.
Right. I mean, one of the issues that people have, I suppose, is that let's say you want to invest in things. Most people, by definition, are not good at investing, and it's not their skill. It's just like me turning up at Wimbledon Centre Court and starting to play along with Roger Federer. You know, I don't have the talent, and even if I stood there for 1,000 years, I wouldn't be able to get the talent. It seems to be that you have a lot of people, let's say, you know, newsletters and other advisors and people who are actually the one in the 100 who are actually good at this sort of thing. And it's very difficult to teach somebody with, you know, without the skill. to actually get it right. So, you know, you might say, you know, Google's a great opportunity now, and somebody gets into it and they totally mess it up. They stay in longer than they should have, or they buy too high, or whatever it is. Isn't that an issue as well, that, you know, you're preaching to people who generally are not savvy, they don't have the skill? And how do you allow for that kind of sort of mismatch, let's say?
Well, there's a few different ways. One is to have good newsletter writers who do point people in the right directions. So that might involve recommending specific investments, which we don't do at Fortune and Freedom, but we might do in other publications. So that's the other extreme scenario of actually having investment recommendations, if we choose to do that at some point in a different publication to Fortune and Freedom. But we believe that even if you improve your investment abilities, you know, marginally by becoming aware of just some risks, for example, then you can actually outperform what you would have invested in if you hadn't informed yourself. So sure, if you're going to take all your money out of a fund and invest it all in Google stocks, that's just the wrong thing to do. Yeah, it increases the risk dramatically, and it's just basically dangerous for anyone to invest in any particular stock. But if you understand the benefits of, say, holding an ETF versus being in a fund, or if you believe inflation is going to come, then what sorts of investment should you hold? Or, for example, we've written a lot about gold in Fortune and Freedom. Gold's outperformed stocks dramatically over the last 20 years. Most financial advisors, most fund managers, most finance professionals are not aware of that, let alone the people they invest for. So we like to point out these sorts of things, and we do believe people can at least improve what they have been getting for the last 20 years by becoming aware of things, even if it's just marginally better over time.
So if I understand it correctly, you are not part of you're not part of the financial establishment. You're slightly, let's say, renegade. You're a free thinking, open-minded type people. You don't have an axe to grind. You don't care whether it's Bitcoin or gold or stocks or investing in Maltesers. It doesn't make any difference to you as long as you think the result is there. And isn't the main problem that the average person in the street has is that the people they speak to are all skewed one way or the other, and that's the real problem. You'll never get objective advice. It's very difficult to find objective advice and skilled advice at the same time.
Yeah, we have a lot more freedom than a lot of people in the industry. So, for example, fund managers are restricted in what they can invest in. We don't have the same sorts of constraints. We do have other constraints. For example, we have to take into account how many people read our newsletter and whether it's appropriate to suggest different types of investments. So we do have to be careful in much the same way. But you're right, we don't have any sort of conflicts of interest. We're not beholden to advertisers. We don't have relationships with other companies. There's no kickbacks, there's no commissions, there's nothing other than the reader and us. However, it's important to note that all of our editors have opinions, and some of them are very strong and they differ from each other. So a lot of people get very confused by this. They complain that, I disagree with Nigel about something, or one of my colleagues has written something that disagrees with what I've written earlier. And they find that quite difficult to deal with because they don't get it elsewhere. But that's the whole point, is we don't have this company line. There's no... And there's complete freedom to disagree with each other. And we believe that actually gives the reader the best possible result. And one of the interesting things I've noticed about that over the years is our best readers, in terms of interaction with us and the people who enjoy the newsletter most, are very often people who disagree with us, because they like that challenge and that debate and having to argue it out in order to understand it better. And I agree with that. I think that brings out the best in our writers and the ideas that we end up presenting to the readers.
Right, so you avoid the groupthink that we seem to have in society as a whole at the moment.
Yeah, we try to, and we can be quite successful with that at times. We get very suspicious if we agree too much, actually. So we have a lot of debates and arguments, and there's a lot of people on the team who are quite happy to play devil's advocate just to improve the quality of the idea by having to argue it out and really justify it and hit the objections is how we term it.
So you're kind of in a state of conflict. I managed to get 10 minutes into this interview without mentioning the elephants in the room, which, you mentioned part of his name, Nigel Farage. I think that what struck me when I sort of was reading up on Fortune and Freedom was the phrase "take back control," which I think even if you were on the winning side of the EU debate, it might send shivers up the spine, in the sense that we haven't done that. And in fact, speaking of, you know, establishment figures, you've got the whole of the establishment against you on the Brexit side. You've got the judiciary, you've got the government, you've got the executive, you've got in the church, probably the royal family. I mean, you've got the whole works are against you. That didn't work out so well, and with the free thinking and open-mindedness and everything else that Mr. Farage had, his one error was to trust in the government to deliver the will of the people. I hope that Fortune and Freedom doesn't make errors like that in other areas.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, isn't it? But the whole point of taking back control of your investments, of your money, of your finances, is that it's very much reliant on you as opposed to reliant on the government. I'm not so sure we consider the government to be a reliable source of what you should do with your money and your investments. Historically speaking,
else.
It hasn't worked
or
out.
Or anything else, actually.
That's right. So one of the interesting things that Nigel and I share is a belief in the libertarian ideology. So we're not fans of government intervention. And you know, historically, that hasn't worked out well. As for Brexit, I don't know what to say other than just to laugh. I mean, I actually went to work in Thailand as a flying trapeze artist just after the referendum for about 6 months. So I just missed a lot of the chaos and the in sort of insecurity within government about what they were going to actually do now that the referendum had gone against them. So I'm not surprised that they've managed to fudge it for so long. And I'm still not completely convinced they'll deliver on anything remotely like Brexit. But yeah, we're definitely not relying on the government delivering what's in the interests of the people in Fortune and Freedom.
So, I mean, I think that's the thing. So somebody, I mean, I've been in the markets for more than 30 years in one guise or the other. And it is amazing though, that, and let's say we agree on the government being against the individual in that way, the financial area as well is very established. You know, it's a sort of a mafia in most of the areas. The brokers and the fund managers are all friends of each other, everybody's patting each other on the back. It's very difficult for the average person to get away from that trap. I mean, you know, that is still the issue, isn't it? To find an independent voice to help you.
Yeah, so my life plan was to end up becoming a financial newsletter writer once I'd had a good career in the markets in some form. But 2008 blew that up spectacularly. And I actually saw from the inside how the industry dealt with that. And I just knew I couldn't work there. The reason people in the industry get paid so much is basically because they sell their soul, as far as I'm concerned, the conflicts of interest and how people deal with them and what the industry is really out to do. I'm just not a fan and I couldn't do it. But what worries me here is the idea that that means you shouldn't do anything about it. When I would suggest the opposite, it means, well, if the financial industry is not acting in your best interest or to the extent that you might expect, then maybe you should be doing it yourself, because the only one you can trust to have your own best interest at heart is you. So assuming you do take this seriously and assuming that you're careful and prudent and you learn about the risks and so on and so forth, you should be taking back control of your investments, of your finances and of your money. And I'm sure you'll make some mistakes along the way, but the point is that we believe you'll do better over time.
So it's basically sounds a bit like setting up your own business, really, that it's almost like the difference between being an employee and owning your own company. Is that the analogy that you would say?
I suppose so, but there's lots of ways that that wouldn't be correct, in the sense that that's a very onerous obligation, starting a business, whereas taking back some control of your money, doing this marginally and at the pace that you're comfortable with, is very different level of obligation. But yeah, it's a good analogy in many ways.
And so finally, what's the goal for the average, if I subscribe to your service, after, let's say, a year or 2 years, something like that, I presume, would I have you know, a comfortable amount of cash, or have the potential for that, or how what's the goal? Let's just say, what's the sort of goal there?
I think it's an awareness of what's going on and what is really going on, what's behind the story. I think that's what Nigel really brings to this, is he's got a history of predicting how things would unfold, not just in politics, but in financial markets. That's how I actually came to know about him in the first place, a long time ago. So understanding about what is really going on and what is likely to happen next, and then how you should position yourself, given what we expect, if you agree with us, and that is always a big if. What I think people need to take away from Fortune and Freedom over time is that partially an empowerment that they can do it themselves, and that, you know, they can outperform whatever the financial situation was before they started reading Fortune and Freedom. But perhaps more importantly, the idea that if you continue as you're going now, then I just think you'll be disappointed. Chances are you will be. And that really worries me, and it'd be, you know, disappointing for me, knowing that there's people out there that are, you know, still believing stock markets go up in the long run, or whatever the assumption is, or still believing that the financial industry has the best interests at heart, when in some cases it doesn't. So waking up to the reality, much as Nigel spent his political career waking people up to the nature of the EU, we're trying to wake people up to the nature of not just the bad sides of the financial industry, but also the good ones that they're missing out on.
Okay, well, on that chirpy note, to Nick Hubble from Fortune and Freedom, thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. Remember to visit our website for more news and other podcasts at www.share-talk.com.